Welcome again to the Tweed Renegades. Thanks for joining us for another half hour of irrelevant pseudo-intellectual bulldust. My name's Plato Sandilands, joining you from exile. And on the line from Australia, it's Milton Johnson. Now let's begin the show by talking about something other than Julia Gillard. Corey Bernardi was under fire recently and was sacked from his position by the conservative Stone Age Catholic Tony Abbott simply for suggesting that legalising gay marriage may put us on a slippery slope that leads to other sexual preference groups demanding marriage rights and other sexual rights. One of those groups, of course, is people who are attracted to animals, and they're a genuine group. People do exist out there who are attracted to animals. And there was even an article in the paper about how some people from this community believe that they're the next gay rights movement and they're going to fight for their sexual rights. So Corey Bernardi's completely vindicated. And so I sent that link along to Andrew Bolt, because Bolt was one of Bernardi's critics. Now, I criticised Bernardi as well. I said he was a fool for coming out and saying that, because obviously in today's politically correct climate, he should have known better than to say something like that. But I support the statement that he made, and he made a good point. So I emailed this to Andrew Bolt. Yeah, and I said, Andrew, just wondering when you're going to apologise to Bernardi for condemning him. Sure, he was a fool given the current PC climate, but what he needs is support from other conservatives for telling the truth, not your brand of damp PC neoconservatism.
Yes, yes.
And of course, spot he didn't on. Reply.
No, absolutely. Well, that's exactly right. And in fact, all Bernardi was doing was extending the Andrew Bolt's slippery slope argument.
Yeah.
As Andrew Bolt himself has argued that it's a slippery slope and we could go on to polygamy and stuff. And of course, all Bernardi was doing was taking it to a further conclusion, saying that once you decide you were going to have complete sexual anarchy and recognition of all types of relationships, then where does it end? And then, obviously, you've got these morons, these perverts getting up there from the calling themselves zoos, saying that they're sexually attracted to animals and that they want the government to recognise that.
Yeah, and there's also the pedophilia movement, which has been going on for years. That's no secret. There are people who believe it's a totally legitimate thing, and they've been fighting for rights for years.
Well, that's right. And I think you'll find that in the hierarchy of public consciousness, you'll find that obviously the powers that be have tried to condition us to accept homosexuality, and so that's been accomplished. And the next one would be obviously the whole pedophilia thing. They'll start probably trying to get around the edges and have all these sad stories about how, you know, there was this wonderful guy and there was this, you know, 15-year-old girl or something and they fell in love but the state didn't recognise their love, and they'll probably push that, push the boundaries down even further. They'll come up with some kind of a, you know, they'll probably have some kind of a movie about how, you know, those two people fell in love and that their society didn't recognise it and that they were wrested from each other and it was a sad tale of tragedy and all this stuff. And then they'll start pushing away at that, and then it'll be like some kind of a, you know, there was a 14-year-old boy who was in love with his benevolent gay teacher, and they were shunned by society, and they'll have it set in some kind of a 1970s, you know, homophobic, pedophobic context where the community just didn't understand their love.
Well, they've already been pushing that sort of thing on the fringes. Like, I know that show Queer as Folk had like a pedophilic subplot in one of the episodes.
Mm.
So they'll start introducing it to the mainstream pretty soon.
Yeah, it's already started. And then you've got, although of course Queer as Folk is not exactly mainstream, but it's kind of art house edging towards mainstream. Yeah,
it's on the fringe, but then pretty soon they'll bring it into the mainstream.
Oh yeah, so that's the next thing. And then you've got polygamy. I can imagine how they'd promote that.
You know what the catch cry will be? My only crime is loving too many people.
Yes. That's right. Love equality.
Yes.
Which can apply to anything. And then, after all that is accepted, then they'll just say, what the hell? We don't have any absolute morals. Let's get those animal-loving freaks. Let's recognise them as well.
That's right.
Yeah, then what next? Maybe the plant sexual rights movement. You know, I like to have my way with plants. Yes, let's go for it.
Look, anybody who's attracted to animals, there's pretty much no limit on what you could be attracted to.
However, the other thing is that there was a documentary that I saw, that documentaries thing about so-called objectum sexuals. There were people who were attracted to, mainly women actually, who were attracted to like things like the Eiffel Tower
and things like that.
It's like, I love you, Eiffel Tower. Oh, I love. And they were, for some reason, they were disproportionately fat blobs, and they were sitting there, you know, straddling their fat frames around some kind of poor metallic object.
I'll tell you why they're fat blobs, because most of them were probably abused or had some kind of psychological trauma as a youngster, and they've been trying to heal the pain by shoveling their face.
Actually, it's interesting you mention that, because in that documentary, they talk about the backgrounds of these people, and they do have very troubling backgrounds.
Of course.
And, you know, absent fathers or distant parents and things like that. Or no fathers at all. So, yeah.
There was a bloke on this show called My Strange Addiction, and he was, like, having a sexual relationship with his car. And they showed him polishing his car, and he's like, oh, yeah, baby, oh, yeah. And it was also gay because he called the car by a man's name. And then they showed him telling his father about it, and he was like, Dad, I'm having a relationship with my car. And the father was like, okay. It's an emotional and a sexual relationship. Sexual too? It's like, how does that work? And then the worst thing was they took him to some psychiatrist, and he basically said, okay, yes, well, look, are you happy in this relationship? Well, look, then, as long as you're happy in this relationship, then other people just have to accept you the way you are, you know?
That's ridiculous! You're a pervert!
Look,
goodness,
there's something wrong with this guy. I mean, doesn't he want a real relationship, a real fulfilling relationship? Doesn't this shrink want to help him? Or does he just want to get his fee?
No, I think he just wants money. It's easier. The course of least resistance, you know, is just to say, well, whatever you want, son, is okay by me. Now give me the money.
Then there was another freak. He was in this relationship with this lifelike doll, and he was like talking to this doll like it was a real person. And then and he'd been in this relationship with this doll for about 10 years, and then he said, oh, look, just to spice things up a bit, I'm going to bring in this other doll and have an affair with her. And when after he went on this My Strange Addiction show, he like set himself up as an internet celebrity, and he like does these tweets where he's like, yeah, the doll and I are just going out cruising or something like that, like tweeting like celebrities do. Interesting quote here. Larry Pickering says that Julia Gillard makes Gough Whitlam look like Menzies. And she does. Honestly, she does. I'd be like, come on, Gough, we need you. Tony Abbott makes Whitlam look like Menzies. I mean, I know he was a profligate arsehole, but seriously, I mean, at least he believed in something.
Sorry, that curry is clearing my nose. And possibly soon to clear my bowels.
Can I put that bit in the podcast?
Yeah, you can put that in the podcast if you like.
Abbott, though, I'm seriously worried about what he's going to be like. Because, I mean, I know we all want to get rid of Gillard, obviously. And he can never possibly be as bad, so I don't know what I'm worried about, really. He can't be worse than this. But I'm worried. He's hopeless.
He's very erratic, isn't he?
He's an idiot. He's just totally driven by polls as much as Gillard is.
Yeah, well, I think it, I mean, Abbott's got that reputation as being a bit of a loose cannon. So it wouldn't hurt him to actually be a bit unscripted from time to time. I know that he says, I mean, his party will say, oh, the media will crucify me if I do that, but the media crucify him anyway, so what's the difference?
Well, I guess we'll find out when he gets elected, but, I mean, I don't have much hope at all.
He seems to be too loose with money, too.
Oh, yeah, bloody oath. And he actually said that if he was in... I don't know why the hell he said this. It was either him or Joe Hockey said that if they'd been in government, they would have approved most of the stimulus anyway.
Oh, well, there you go. So you expect the Liberal Party to at least be the ones to say, look, I know that the government is run by children at the moment. They're socialists and they love to spend money and they love to feel good about themselves and promote all these wonderful feel-good causes at the nation's expense. But we're adults here and now we've won government and now we're going to cut the crap, stop the useless spending, turn back the boats. Hang on, that sounds like a Tony Abbott. turn back the boats. And get everything sorted. But then they come up with crap like, oh, I know, maybe we could have like a maternity leave scheme.
Or maybe we could give money to victims of terrorist attacks.
Yes! Oh, because there's so many victims of terrorist attacks, aren't there?
Yeah, and the media, obviously, you say it gives them fodder to talk about him being based on fear, but in that case it's probably a reasonable criticism.
Well, yes, that's right. But that's what I'm saying. That's why when he does stuff like that, it's like, well, not only is it an empty gesture, but it's just a spontaneous gesture. And like, it's like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah.
He just come up with these things every so often. He's like, I know, terrorism's bad. Terrorism is really bad. And I'm going to give some money to the victims of terrorism.
As people have pointed out, more people have died as a result of peanut allergies and the like than have died as a result of terrorism. So what is this?
Oh, thank you, Tony Abbott, any more ideas?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, what's happened? We had the Bali terrorist attacks. We had 9/11 and the London bombing. And then what's happened since then? What have we had to justify all this invasion of our rights? What about airline hijackings? The height of airline hijackings was the 60s and 70s. There was a whole heap of them. And we didn't have the kind of intrusion of our rights that we're having now. Unfortunately, yeah, well, that's probably just going to give fodder to Fox News to say, well, this just proves that the invasion of your rights has really been effective, you know?
Yeah, and you're not a true American if you don't support your hands being down your pants, or someone's hands being down your pants and being fried and groped, because that's the American way.
And, of course, that's to say nothing about the whole issue of using our citizens as cannon fodder to fight in neocon adventures. But that reminds me, actually, of something I saw in the paper. Yeah, here it is. War-weary Australians stay the course. Foreign Minister Bob Carr says Australia must stay the course in Afghanistan or risk ruining his reputation on the world stage. Oh, gee, we wouldn't want that to happen, would we? It's much better to use our citizens as cannon fodder and protect our reputation on the world stage, isn't it?
Well, what reputation are they trying to protect? Reputation as US NWO lackeys? That's not a reputation I'd be keen to protect.
I've got a confession to make, Milton. Lately, I have fallen into the habit, when I can't be bothered doing anything intelligent, of watching videos on the internet of people falling over and hurting themselves and getting hit in the nuts.
Oh, no. That sounds like Funny Stone Video shows.
It's kind of like Funny Stone Videos, but it, I don't know, it's just kind of fascinating. Like, it's partly funny and partly just fascinating watching people do stupid things and get hurt.
Mm. Yeah, well, it makes you wonder how there's so many videos of that happening, because it's like, normally when stuff like that happens, it's normally off camera, isn't it? So, I mean, do you reckon some of them are set up?
No, I don't think so. Some of them are so, well, most of them are so painful. I don't think anyone would deliberately do that. I think they were probably like, film me riding down the handrail of this escalator on my bike or something. This will be so cool. And then, like, obviously, yeah, as you'd expect, it goes completely wrong and they end up hurting themselves. Mm. So I think it's just people thinking they're cool and thinking they're going to do something funny, and then it ends up with them hurting themselves.
What about this bloody train surfers? It's like...
I'm surprised that hasn't been on any of the videos, but no.
Mm. Well, you know, they have all this government thing about, well, people saying, well, you know, when people are morons and they do stupid things, and they always say, what's the government doing to stop this? It's like, have you ever thought that, you know, if people do really stupid things and kill themselves, that might be a way of improving the gene pool, perhaps?
Well, I mean, exactly. It's not the government's fault if people choose to do stupid things.
Hmm. It's like, what's the government doing about the fact that I'm a dickhead?
I know the Age had this ridiculous story on the front page of their paper like a few years ago, because some idiot train surfed and got electrocuted by the thingy that connects to the power line. This train like turned up at Flinders Street Station with his dead body on the roof, and the front page of the Age was like, the tragedy of our youth, why are they getting killed doing train surfing and all this sort of rubbish. And it was kind of like the sort of thing where journalists have this idea that if they present something horrible, then it's for a greater good. You know, it's not good to present something horrible, but if we present it, maybe the community will spring into action, or maybe the government will take notice. You see, we've got to let people know what's going on in their community so they're aware and something changes. It's like, what can you do about a bunch of dickheads surfing on the top of a train?
Oh, no. Well, I guess that's just journos and their own ego thinking that they're, you know, they're improving society. It's like... Why don't they just say they report, you know, some dickhead train surfer rocked up dead, and it was terrible for commuters, but and also they reported it as like the tragedy of our youth rather than just, you know, one moron skylarking.
Exactly, and I mean you're never going to sort out problems like that until there's a complete change in society, until society basically regains morals, and that's the last thing newspapers like The Age want is morals.
Oh yeah, I mean the funny thing is to find to know whether our society has lost its way. It's increasingly common to look to the east. You ask yourself questions like, what chance would such a story have of appearing in the front page of a Japanese newspaper of someone train surfing and winding up dead?
I don't know. I mean, Japan itself is probably one of the more westernized countries, so I think that's probably one of the eastern countries where it's more likely to happen. But Singapore or something, obviously, where they still believe in morals, something like that would be very rare.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Andrew Bolt said, it's like there was some vandalism incident was like front page on the news in Singapore, and Andrew Bolt was like, well, we'd need an entire bloody newspaper just to cover the vandalism.
Hmm, that's right. It was a Swiss man too. Mm. And he went to Singapore and went into a foreign country and decided it would be a great idea to, you know, vandalise property. So, how rude is that? I mean, you don't go into someone else's country and start vandalising their property.
Yeah.
You shouldn't even do it in your own country, but to go to someone else's country and then start, totally disrespecting it, well, you know, just bad manners. It's rude.
And that's interesting because Switzerland's one of the probably at the civilised end of Western countries, and yet here was this Swiss bloke going over to Singapore and vandalising.
Yeah, well, that's right. I'd like to think that, he's the outlier there, that most people wouldn't do that, but especially most Swiss people. But I think also that there's a lack of respect by many Aussies when they're over at in places like Bali, Indonesia, and things like that, thinking that it's some kind of an outpost of Australia almost, and running amok, like treating Indonesia like it's the same morally bereft place that that Australia is.
But, you know, I guess if they were that concerned about it, they'd, like, bar us from entering or something, so they obviously like the tourist dollars, but
Well, they do, but, I mean, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing when you get these bogans who are rolling in there because of the cheap airfares and just making dickheads of themselves and putting out a bad image of Australia. I mean, most Aussies would go overseas and there wouldn't be any problems, but, I mean, I think there's too many ferals from broken homes.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know. It's like the government approach, of course, is we'll rehabilitate them, or we'll have an education plan or an education program to educate these people to make them better citizens. It's like it's too little, too late. If you come from a broken home and you're not brought up with any morals to begin with, the last thing that's going to help is a government education program. People just ridicule those things.
Not only that, but I mean, can the government give someone a father back in the first 6 years of their life?
Yeah.
Live across the globe from Command Central, you're listening to... Oh, bugger, I've forgotten what it is.
Now, you've been arguing for quite some time that it would be better if the ABC were privatised. And that's something that I had a bit of a problem with to begin with, because I've long been of the opinion that if we're going to have TV, and by the way, you could argue that society would be better off without TV, and that's something I definitely wouldn't object to, but I've argued that if we're going to have TV, I'd rather have a broadcaster that was going to provide a slightly better quality service, like the ABC and the SBS. But, you know, in recent years, the ABC just becomes so unashamedly biased that I'm starting to become very sympathetic to your view that we should privatise this thing.
Well, by the way, it'd be interesting to see how left-wing the ABC remains after it's become privatised.
Yeah.
Well, we can see fearless and independent these journalists are.
Yeah, exactly. If it was privatised, it'd just become another Fairfax. I mean, if they didn't change it, at least, anyway. But what was I going to say? That's one thing that would annoy me, though, I guess, when just you're bringing up the privatisation again. I can just imagine what the ABC would become, and it'd just be another outlet for all these bloody American sitcoms and stuff. And that's, I guess, what I don't like about the idea.
Yeah, although, but hang on, not necessarily. I mean, the ABC could differentiate their product by quality, you know, still continue to produce the same programming, but don't you think they'd have a niche amongst certain demographics? I mean, it's not necessarily because they privatise that they're going to suffer, you know, an enormous drop in quality.
Well, but that's what they've been doing for the last 10 years. They've been chasing ratings ahead of quality, whereas back in the 90s, it was all about just making better quality programming. They weren't anywhere near as concerned about the ratings, whereas in the throughout the zeros, that focus was definitely put on the ratings, and the quality's just declined immeasurably since then. So, and especially
that's a good argument.
Yeah, and especially since if they were going to become profit-driven, then, I mean, they could continue to provide the same programming and they wouldn't be making anywhere near as much profit as the commercial network, so they'd obviously have to change something.
Yes, that's a fair point. So you say that since their corporatisation of the ABC and the drive to become more market-focused, that's already had an effect, so obviously that will intensify once that becomes privatised.
Yeah. I remember back in like 96, Howard was threatening to cut the ABC's budget by whatever, like $1 million a year or something. It was like nothing. And all the friends of the ABC were up in arms about, oh, what are they doing to ABC and all this sort of stuff. And then when Jonathan Shire got in, they were like, oh, Jonathan Shire is a bastard, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like they were too busy fighting these little battles to worry about the overall issue. And it's just like in the last 10 years, they have just... they've cut the amount of programming they've actually made so much, and they've sold off their studios, and they've basically downsized and turned it into just a... it's pathetic now. They have, like, four channels or something, and on basically not that much more of a budget than what they had when they were running one channel. So it's like so much of their programming now is just absolutely cheapskate, crappy, like, magazine-style stuff, and they do so little in the way of drama and comedy like they used to do. It's just pathetic. It's just a shell of what it used to be.
But then I guess you could make the argument, well, why don't we give them more money? Because they've spread their resources very thin, and if we give them more money, that they could improve their product there.
I would say is just forget the bloody five bloody channels and whatever the hell they're trying to do, and forget doing the Asia-Pacific network or whatever the hell it is. Go back to doing what they originally set up to do, which was provide one channel for Australians of good quality programming. Stop trying to take over the bloody world.
BBC have already taken over the world, so the ABC shouldn't even try.
BBC is exactly the same. They're like selling off all their studios and just making all their programming as cheaply as possible. Forget it. Just do one channel of good programming. It'd be worth so much more than five channels of crap.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point. The ABC News 24 channel, it's one thing that it could improve on is they keep sourcing their material from like the BBC and Al Jazeera, which are obviously globalist outfits. They try a bit of Russia Today, mix it up a little bit.
that'd
be good. Imagine that. That'd be so much better. Just a different perspective on these things.
The ABC are communists. Why don't they do that? What's their big beef with Russia?
Ah, well, but that's the funny thing, though. I mean, it's like the ABC left-wing as far as stupidity goes, but then when you've got real issues like, involving ourselves in wars and stuff like that, it's like they're completely timid.
That's right.
They've just become... I don't even know if they're... I mean, you used to say the ABC... okay, the ABC is culturally left-wing or something, but it's like... now they're just like cheerleaders for Julia Gillard and Labor. It's like it's not even a like. But I think in the Vietnam War, the ABC was very critical of the Vietnam War back in the 60s, and they were like, I think they smuggled people or they helped people get out of the country when the authorities were trying to, or something like that. There was something that these ABC anti-Vietnam sympathizers tried to help this guy avoid authority and stuff like that. It was really radical back in the day. But obviously now it's just become like Labor's good and Liberal's bad.
And why? Like, they obviously have no ideology if they're just barracking for the Julia Gillard team. Why are they doing that? I mean, when she stands for nothing. They, I mean, I would have thought if they're left wingers, they would have been ripping into Julia Gillard.
Well, you'd think so. I mean, but I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying that in some areas, okay, fair enough, in some areas the ABC are left wing, and overall you'd say it's a left wing organisation, but they're just very timid when it comes to areas in which they, you know, you would expect them to be more robust, like, you know, things like the wars and maybe even things like drug companies and, you know, GM Foods and stuff like that. You never hear that. Well, you hardly hear that kind of stuff on the ABC. And that's the what I'm saying is that they're kind of stupidly left-wing, but not intelligently left-wing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, the thing is that this left and right thing is obviously an artificial thing, and I find myself agreeing with the left on some things, and obviously more with the conservatives. But, I mean, the thing is, you know, do you have to be just because you don't like your food tampered with, you know, and just because you think that big companies, you know, as well as big governments can't be trusted, and just because you're opposed to the war and you like to eat organic foods, does that make you some kind of a leftist? Does that mean you can't be a conservative also?
Mm.
According to Andrew Bolton, apparently it does. But
indeed, you know. Which reminds me, Tim Blair wrote something the other day that kind of mildly annoyed me. I forget what it was now, but it was probably something about Israel knowing him. Sometimes I just think, what are you doing, Tim? Are you a Jew or something? Like, why are you obsessed with this one issue that's not really of any relevance to most Australians?
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's like they invest themselves so emotionally into the whole thing. And that guy that I follow on Twitter shakes it up a little bit. What's his name? Neil? Whatever his name is. All he talks about. Well, he used to mix it up a bit. Now he's like obsessed with Zionism, so he's kind of gone the other way. He's like just obsessing about it. And it's like, okay. I like to talk more about the domestic side of things and the general New World Order picture and whatnot. But anyway, so that's his focus. He's decided to focus on that. He is someone who says quite explicitly that he's critical of Israel, and yet all of his other opinions are conservative / libertarian. So yeah. He will regularly tweet about how hopeless Julia Gillard is. You know, a lot of people decide to unfollow him because he, you know, he's critical of a foreign country, Israel.
You know, that's another thing that pisses me off too, is that everybody is so passionate, I guess, that they expect people to agree with everything that they say, and they think that if I disagree with you on one thing, that I have to unfollow you or I can't trust you anymore. It's like,
yeah,
it's part of what the media does. They give the kind of thumbs up and thumbs down to people. Mm. And they do this on all sorts of levels. Like, they even do it with celebrities. Like, I remember just this week, they had this, like, Tom Hanks thing. I just saw it when I was signing into my email. It was some bollocks about Tom Hanks posed with a fan, and this makes him a good person or something, or this is given him praise over the world or some rubbish like that. So it's kind of like, okay, thumbs up to Tom Hanks. He's a great man now. It's just like everything's simplified to you're either good or you're bad. It's like, well, who knows why Tom Hanks did that? Maybe he did it for publicity, or maybe he's got some good qualities, and then maybe in some other areas he's an asshole. It's like you can't simplify everything to thumbs up and thumbs down. And that's what they do with celebrities, and that's what they do with more serious stuff. It's like,
yes,
you've got to either agree entirely with something or disagree with it, you know?
I think Fox News is amongst the worst offenders as far as that kind of stuff goes.
I know, and it's like I disagree with a lot of what Andrew Bolton and Tim Blair says, and that annoys me, but it's not to the point where I would say that I can't trust anything they say, because they still speak probably 80% truth or 80% good stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
That 20% really does piss me off, but, you know, I can still tolerate it. I can still say that, okay, they're sincere. Yeah. They clearly just are a bit ill-informed or a bit whatever on certain issues.
Yeah.
And one other thing that does piss me off about Andrew Bolt and Tim Blair, probably more Andrew Bolt because he talks about this more, is, it doesn't really piss me off, but it's just a bit where he falls into the paradigm, is about the whole renewable energy thing. He talks about how this green scheme cost us this amount of money, and this and you know, solar energy is completely unfeasible because it cost us this amount of money. It's like, it actually probably would be feasible. Like, for example, Tesla in the early, the late 1800s, he used hydropower. It was the first large-scale alternating current plant. He used the hydropower on the Niagara Falls. And that was, you know, he managed to do that. I mean, it would be viable in time, and it would probably save us a hell of a lot of money compared to coal mining. So just because at the moment it's not viable and it's being propped up with government grants doesn't mean that the whole thing should be dismissed just because it happens to be a green scheme.
Yeah, well, that's true as well. I mean, it's judge everything on its merits, and Andrew Bolt's right to the extent that it's always a bad idea, or it's usually a bad idea when governments decides to get involved and start picking winners, because usually more often than not, they're just merely funding something based on their own kind of green propaganda or something. They're based on what feels good or whatnot. But the point is, if it's going to take off, it won't be the government that decides whether it will take off or not. It will be the supply and demand. You know what I mean? So if solar power is to really take off, you will know, because there will be people with money will start investing in the idea because they believe in it. I'm always wary when the government tries to pick winners. So as far as that, what Andrew Bolt talks about, wind farms and things like that, big wastes of ideologically driven money, I'm critical of that too.
Oh, yeah. No, I am too. Like, I know, like, what he says about the government has spent this amount of money to prop up this farm and it's still not generating electricity and that kind of stuff. That's fine. I agree with that. The point is, if anybody ever got that technology to the point where it was viable, which I believe they probably will in time, because everything starts out expensive and then becomes more viable. And it's been shown that in some cases it can be viable. Andrew Bolt is still going to be like, oh, a bunch of greenies. Oh, I'd much rather nuclear power, you know?
Yeah, well,
nuclear power is the way. Oh, just look at Fukushima. Oh, look, Fukushima is just an isolated thing, you know. Oh, look, don't worry about that. That's not a problem, you know.
Well, he said everyone's scaremongering on Fukushima, and he said that no one's actually died from it or something. Did anyone die? I don't know if anyone died. Or was it a handful of people who died or something? I don't know, but he was saying that, people are scaremongering about Fukushima. It's very easy to say, but, I mean, when you start getting children that have, extra toes and extra fingers, then that's not cool.
Thanks again for listening to another Tweed Renegades podcast. This is Plato, Sandy Lands and Milton Johnson signing off, and we hope you'll hear us again soon. If you've got any comments on today's program or anything else, you can email us at mail@tweedrenegades.com. You can tweet to Milton at Lord Bromley, or of course you can visit the website www.tweedrenegades.com. Thanks again for listening, and you'll hear us soon.
Right. Cheerio. Bye-bye.